This episode of Cider Chat was produced with the support of the following Finger Lakes Cider Producers of New York: Bellwether Hard Cider and Wine, which was featured on episode 199, Black Diamond Cider, featured on episode 201, and Redbird Orchard and Cider, featured on last week's episode 202. And also, this week's featured conversation with Garrett Miller of the Finger Lakes Cider House. And coming up next week, we'll be hearing from South Hill Cider, helping me to share with you listeners a nice compilation of this Finger Lakes region of New York, which is just happening for cider makers and cider drinkers like you and I. I'd also like to thank Visit Ithaca of New York for helping to curate my itinerary during the Finger Lakes Cider Week that takes place in September. You can find links to all these cideries and Visit Ithaca by going to the show notes for this year episode 203.
Hi, this is Garrett Miller from Finger Lakes Cider House, located in Interlake in New York, on the west side of Cayuga Lake, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week's feature chat is with Garrett Miller, and we'll be delving into his highs and lows of running a cider business and a farm, and what that has taught him over the years, and what he is looking forward to. So there's a lot of very insightful tips. It's a pretty intimate conversation, and we'll be getting to that feature chat in a moment. But first, a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. It's been a snowy weekend in my spot of Ciderville, 24 inches and counting. Lots of plowing, lots of keeping the dirt road clear. Times like this, it's absolutely beautiful, but it could also be a little bit isolating. So it's really nice to be talking to you, as always, each week. Thank you for checking out Cider Chat. If you're new to this here podcast, please subscribe. And to all you regular listeners, thank you for being there and hanging out with me and discovering the wide, wide world of cider and all the amazing people that are involved. I really appreciate the emails and little notes I get here and there. It really makes my day. One thing I want to share with all of you that you might not have heard, because I never said it on the podcast, but just recently I had high-speed internet coming to my little cider house so I could actually, well, get up to snuff to 2019. For so many years, for almost nearly all 200 episodes of Cider Chat, it's been like slow as molasses on the internet speed, which really was not easy. It took a lot of patience, and patience is a good thing to learn, no doubt. I'll give it that, but it's kind of also excruciating. But since I have had high-speed internet installed, that has allowed me to set up the Cider Chat swag store, because prior to this, it was so slow. The website at tpublic.com would not like wait for me to upload artwork. So my life has kind of totally changed, and I'm like kind of running just to catch up now into what probably many of you listening have as just a matter of fact, high-speed internet. So that has been a lot of fun, and now I could say happily that there are 8 designs now at the Cider Chat swag store, different t-shirts like I Hear Talking Palms at Cider Chat, that's a favorite. We have Save Orchards Drink Perry, which is kind of a statement that I really believe in. There is a reason on the front, and then a We Like Cider on the back. That's another t-shirt. All these could be made into like different tote bags, and you could get stickers. We have Cider Equals Fun, hashtag Cider Up, and hashtag Cider Going Up. Fun stuff. And one of the patrons of Cider Chat, that's Joan Portugal, who's such an engaging fella. He was one of the folks who sent in an audio recording of him singing the We Like Cider song, which is like our Cider Chat podcast anthem. He encouraged me to ask you out there in Ciderville, if you have a saying or a cider design that you'd like to see on a t-shirt, and please do send it my way. It's a great way to help support the podcast. If you can't do that via donation, well, it's really nice to support it and get the word out there. I feel by wearing swag, you know, having something saying cider on my shirt or a hoodie, it starts conversations wherever I am, and it gets the word out that cider is a happening thing. That's one positive to it. By purchasing merchandise via this cider swag store, you also help support the podcast. And we kind of do that any way we can, don't we? Especially if you're thinking about getting some cider chat swag for your family and friends who dig cider too. Just Google that, cider chat swag at TeePublic. You'll find it. Or go to the links in the show note for episode 203. Next week, I'll be out in California, the latter part of the week, heading to Santa Cruz, kind of my home port, if you will. My family is up and down throughout California, but I'll be, well, helping my mom, who is a senior citizen, get back to my brother for the winter. She's got to get out of the snow. Oh, my God. She loves it, but it keeps her a little snowbound. Anyways, Mom and I are traveling there, and I am really excited to see if I could get a little bit of time to meet up with some of my friends and cider makers in that region, like Tanuki Cider and Santa Cruz Cider Company, and also Rider Ranch and Saraventi, and then there's a 5 Mile Orchard, Jake Mann. I don't think I'm going to be able to have time to see everybody. I'd love to see Laura Everett at SoCal Cider. I might just have to go around to all the stores and buy all their cider to kind of pack it to bring it home. But I know in January, I'm going to be seeing them, specifically on January 28th, which is the kickoff day for the United States Association of Cider Makers, their annual trade conference called CiderCon. And this year it's taking place in Oakland, California. And that is like a hop, skip, and a jump from San Francisco. I will be having an episode dedicated to going to CiderCon and giving you some fantastic tips, at least I think, on how to maneuver around Oakland. It's a little bit of a different kind of city than San Francisco. And I had the pleasure of being there and doing some interviews with both Redfield, and that's a cider bar, and then Dana Bushhouse of the Crooked City Cider. She has a cider bar there. It's really close to where the Cider Conference is going to be taking place. And getting back to the 28th, that is a day that there's a lot of tours that the association offers. They're going to actually have 4 different tours. So people who arrive early get to kind of spread out and see what's happening in California. And let me tell you, a lot is happening in California. There is just so much passion there right now. It's a very exciting cider scene up and down the coast. So there's a tour going out to Sonoma, out to San Francisco, you know, a tour that has like food and cider pairing, some good stuff. And I, in addition, will be leading a tour to the Parajo Valley, which is essentially inland from Monterey Bay. And all those makers that I just mentioned, they're going to be on that tour, and we're going to have a fun time. We're going to be stopping at Cider Junction in San Jose, which is a cider bar, seeing Tracy and Claudia, the publicans there, and checking that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a pleasure for me. If you don't know already, you should know that I lead cider tours internationally, and my last one was in the New England Cider Tour, and it was just so much freaking fun, I can't tell you. Hanging out with people all day, drinking and not having to drive, and just having the ability to kind of get down, get into it. If you want to have fun and just be laughing your ass off all day and hanging out with some really cool people, come on the Parajo Valley Cider Tour with me at CiderCon. I'll be telling you more as we're rolling up now to this amazing event that happens each year in January. Again, it's January 28th through the 31st in Oakland, California. They're looking for volunteers right now. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to this email, but if you are in that area, you want to volunteer, whether you're a commercial person or a cider enthusiast, everybody's welcome. You just email pickcider@ciderassociation.org. And there you will have a contact and could get in some volunteering, and that will also help you maybe go to CiderCon if it's maybe a little bit too deep pockets for you right now. But I'll be there, and I'm looking forward to it, and I hope to see you there at CiderCon 2020 in Oakland.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
On episode 96 of Cider Chat, Garrett Miller and Melissa Madden were interviewed by Alex Crow. Alex was a guest podcaster who produced not only the Finger Lakes Cider House episode, but also two episodes with Eve's Cidery, which is also based in the Finger Lakes region of New York. There'll be links in the show notes to all three episodes. And from my vantage, there's no way that I could replicate what Alex did. He did such an outstanding job. So I really highly recommend that you listen to those episodes with Alex. And in that case, with Garrett and Melissa, he was really looking at the permaculture aspect of the Finger Lakes Cider House. And a bit also has changed since then. That was 3 years ago. And in that time, both Garrett and Melissa have kind of gone different ways, and Melissa is no longer on the property. So that is a big change, and partly a little bit about what we're going to be delving into in this conversation with Garrett is the changes that come along with running a business of a cidery and how it could also impact your personal relationships. No doubt about that. We're going to begin with driving up to the Finger Lakes Cider House and giving you a visual image of what it looks like and having a little bit of a tour and then a sit down with Garrett Miller. So grab a glass and join this chat. We're headed to the Finger Lakes Cider House in Interlaken, New York, on the west side of Cayuga Lake. Up on a gravel road here. We saw a big sign on the main road. What was that road called there, Kendall?
That's Route 89, the Cayuga Smith Highway.
And it had a big arrow that said cider. Pulled on the road here and we came to some beautiful fields. To my right are apple trees and they are laden with fruit and then some corn in between. I think they do some interesting farming practices here. And then a sign that says Finger Lakes Cider House, says open, Good Life Farm, and a happy dancing bear. And from the distance here, we are up high above Cayuga Lake. I could actually see it down to my right. And I see this big wooden kind of barn setting here. Finger Lakes Cider House, we're going to go in, have some lunch, and then chit-chat. Oh, here's a little tiny cat coming up to me. Cute little short hair. That's always a good sign when the cat comes to meet you. And outside is this beautiful post and beam shed roof front to the Finger Lakes Cider House, stacked with wood. And we see the edible acres right next to us is Ecological Landscaping and Permaculture and Nursery. www.edible. I guess this is edibleacres.com. I'm going to go up the steps, nice big wooden oak steps here. As I rise up, another overhang, and I look out in the distance and I see some greenhouses, kind of the plastic kind of covered greenhouses, lots of plantings of, I'm not sure what that's kind of, strawberries. Kendall says strawberries and a big old dog laying down on the ramp that's leading up here. So this is an accessible location. You could pull up your vehicle, and I don't see a big lip there, so that's nice. Could kind of roll right up if you need to and come into the front door. All right, walking in the front door. And here we are, Finger Lakes Cider House. How exciting. Beautiful pine door with chatter. You go in, and to the right is a long, long, long bar with plenty of seating. And then there's the shop for cider and then drink cider sign. So on the shops for cider, there's all these different bottles set up, and it looks like jams, awesome sauce from the Good Life Farm, which is apple ginger sauce. There are Fruit and Bloom from the Finger Lakes Cider House, Young Cider, and Royal Cider, which I think is their ice cider. Up some cheese here from Lively Run Dairy cheese in here, also from the Finger Lakes, and then the Piggery. You could get some uncured salami, and then some beautiful fun swag here with shirts and caps, even some maple syrup. Awesome. So we're going to go over and have some lunch. At the bar in the tasting room, Cal helped me select a nice flight of Kite and String ciders to have, and we had lunch of grilled cheese and soup. So there's some small bites at the tasting room, some sides with sweet bites, which you could get something like the garlic cumin black beans or sauerkraut, sweet potato hash, oatmeal and cacao cookie. Yummy, yummy stuff. Nothing like a solid little lunch of mac and cheese. Good things to have there. And afterwards, we went upstairs into the office and had a sit-down conversation with Garrett Miller. We're going to go there next.
Yeah, the farm is 11 years old this year, I think.
And what is your actual title here? Do you have an actual title, or is that like a working title?
Working title.
Well, when you first came to the farm, it was like everything.
Yeah, there was no title. It was just like, yeah, we're just doing this. We're farming here.
Yeah, but do you have a title now?
I just say I'm the owner, I guess. I just say. Yeah. It sounds kind of weird. It's not a very good title. I'm not really the farmer, not really the cider maker at this point. There's other people who are more technically, really taking on that role from a technical perspective. My brother Jimmy is a cider maker, mm-hmm. and I really just support him in that role now. We used to do it more together. Similarly, farming, I do a lot of coordinating and sort of planning for it, but more folks are doing technical work of mm-hmm. picking and spray management and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. More and more, it's heading in that direction, I guess.
Yeah.
So. Proprietor, that's a nice word, right?
Proprietor, yeah. Well, let's talk about that.
Cider guy.
Well, what is it? Is it uncomfortable to say that you're an owner of something that you brought so far? Because I'm driving up here and I'm going, this is pretty stinking spectacular, dude.
Thanks. Thank you.
You got it going on. I mean, it's a beautiful little gravel road, and you pull down, you see apple trees. You're overlooking Cayuga Lake. What a view! And then you come into this beautiful building that you built.
Yeah. Yep. I used to work as a contractor while we were getting the farm going, and so ended up just that was like the undertaking was building infrastructure, building stuff, building buildings.
Yeah.
So that was the first 5-6 years of this project was just building stuff.
No kidding.
And now we're sort of rolling a little bit more with the actual doing of
things. Has the building stopped?
No. We were building stuff over the winter. In the winter we get back into construction. We built a new area for. Mostly for dry storage, production storage, holding cases. Instead of paying for warehousing, we wanted to keep things on the farm and be able to we have so much stuff to keep undercover, keep it dry.
Yeah. So do you have apple storage here?
We have a cooler that we're outgrowing. Yeah, it's like a 600-square-foot cooler, but we also store all of our kegging system in there and other farm produce, and the kitchen food program stores food in the cooler. So we actually, in the future, we're going to be looking toward more apple storage that's just dedicated to apples. But we like to try to press things pretty fresh, where they're like 2 weeks harvested. So we'll store stuff a lot outside. We have apples in bins right now outside. Mm-hmm. They'll hold for a couple weeks, and they actually maybe will improve mm-hmm. the pressing quality of them, get more juice yield. Mm-hmm. And we live close to the north country of the apple country of New York, where they just have massive cold storage. So that might be a way to not have to have our own serious infrastructure on the farm for quite a while to be able to store apples up there if we need to.
Right. So are all the apples for your cider from this location, or are you bringing apples in from another area?
Yeah, so mostly they're not from the farm at this point. Our production of cider has grown enough that grown much more rapidly than our capacity to grow apples. It's a much longer process for us. You know, it's a 8 to 10 year trajectory on ordering some nursery stock and then presenting a bottle of finished cider. It's like an 8 year trajectory at least. Mm-hmm. So that our scale of cider has increased and grown past our production, and my learning curve as an orchardist is slow, so I'm slowing that down. I'm trying not to make as many mistakes as we did maybe early on growing trees.
Yeah.
So most of the fruit now comes from other farms in the Finger Lakes. I'd say probably only like 10% this year will be from the farm, which 5 years ago was enough to make it all from the farm, but now is no longer enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with probably 6 or 7 orchards in the Finger Lakes that we really like that are growing some very interesting varieties. There's a ton of new orchard blocks coming out that are cider-specific varieties that we're really excited about. So this week we have a truckload coming that has like 10 bins of Kingston Black on it, and you know, 5 bins of Balmer's Norman. And
from the Finger Lakes region?
Yeah. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, just an hour away from here. There's a one grower that we work with has a really nice cider block that's coming into production the last couple of years.
Wow.
So yeah, there'll probably be 20 bins of bittersweets on that and a couple bins of crabs. And
and you have that single varietal Baldwin.
Yeah, it's actually like 90% Baldwin with a little bit of Wicks and Crab in there.
Okay.
Which has made it really a huge improvement. Yeah.
So that's like 11% Baldwin. So when you are describing cider, how do you describe cider to people?
I guess it depends on who's asking. A lot of folks who come into our tasting room are still wondering if this is all made from apples or if this is all, if this is alcoholic. And so if they're asking that, then we're starting at a very basic level.
Sure.
And we're using wine more as an analogy at that point, where we're like, okay, like, you know, this is like wine, but you know, it's its own separate category, but it's fruit. You know, we're pressing fresh fruit, we're making an alcoholic product from fruit juice. So we start as simple as that. And then folks who are more familiar with it, maybe we're talking about like the, you know, cider or apple history of New York, or the kind of cultural practices of the Finger Lakes, and sort of an emerging style of cider that's coming out of the Finger Lakes. We talk a little bit about that.
So do you see cider as wine?
That's a good question. I think I probably do. I think right now I see wine as a big term, like that. That it's much more than just grape wine. You know, I see what people call wine as grape wine, but that the practices and living next to a bunch of wineries, we're surrounded by over 100 wineries and are really involved with vineyard growers, vineyard workers, winemakers, assistant winemakers, enology colleges. People who are in the business of and like culture of pressing fruit and ferment seasonally and having seasonal production cycles around fresh, interesting, specifically grown fruit for making alcohol. And so I'm like, well, that's really what we're doing. The government considers us making apple wine. Taxes is like we're making apple wine.
Yeah. I mean, your Baldwin at 11% is kind of like a wine level. So are you considering that a cider at 11%?
Well, yeah, so I
know there's like the whole fed thing around the alcohol and stuff like that, but so folks coming in who are, you know, tasting a Baldwin that's 11%, are you calling that cider then?
Yeah, everything that we make we're branding as cider, so we're, you know, still able, even if things don't fall necessarily into a cider tax class, they can still be called cider on the label. Some of our fruit that we work with is naturally ferment above 8.4%.
So it's not an apple wine.
I don't.
Does it
I don't.
An apple wine.
I don't consider anything we make apple wine. I guess.
No, but I mean, is there such a thing as apple wine, or is apple wine cider?
Yeah, I think it's cider. Semantics. Oh, I think. Okay. I think if you're in Germany, it's apple wine. If you're in America at
cider. I don't think they have it that high of ABV, though. Apple Vine at 11%.
Yeah, right. So I guess we're, like, just the cider, the sort of revival of cider in America, feeling like there's so much room for our creativity or lack of sort of preconceived rules. Like, in the wine world, there's a lot more, the grape wine world, there's a lot more specific ideas about this is Pinot Noir, this is Cab Franc, this is how things should be.
Right.
With cider, we're feeling like we can experiment a little more and say, what does cider taste like that is, you know, in those higher ABV ranges, and what is it like with a little bubbles? What's it like with a lot of bubbles? Mm-hmm. What is it like with many years of aging? We're doing more experiments with how long.
Are you able to, like, age your cider for? Like, what's the aging process there? Cellaring process, I should say. How's that looking?
We do a lot of the most production, you know, most sort of different types of cider or labels of cider that we make are in the Champagne method, that traditional method of production.
Yeah.
And we find that works well for us with, like, it just being super low tech. You don't need a lot of high tech equipment, expensive equipment. It's a lot of labor, but we have a lot of labor available in the winter from people, from the staff when things are slower on the apple and farm side. And those ciders in particular, we're finding maybe have some more aging capacity, depending, like, when they're in that tirage, that sort of resting stage. There's certain ciders, certain kind of makeups of cider we're finding will improve over 1 year of aging or two.
Mm-hmm.
We're in our seventh year of production, I think, this year. So, that's a really challenging thing from a cash flow perspective is to age cider. Mm-hmm. So we're still exploring that. We don't have any kind of conclusive ideas except for that if we can give something a year in the bottle that's in the Champagne method, that is oftentimes, like, really qualitatively makes a difference.
Right.
And particularly with our products like Pommeau and Ice Cider, minimum 1 year before they're really feeling like they're ready. So we're just now releasing some stuff from last fall, like our new Ice Ciders and Pommeaus.
The Ice Cider, are you doing that in a freezer or outdoors?
We do two, well, we make four Ice Ciders now, which is kind of ridiculous, but we just keep making more and more products and not stopping.
Is that different, like, varieties of apples that you're doing there? How do you separate the four different, what are the four different kinds?
So we have four Ice Ciders. One is what we call our traditional Ice Cider that has some American heirlooms and bittersweets and russet-type varieties in there. We have a wild fermented Ice Cider this year that was just sort of a small lot that went off on a wild fermentation that we sort of let and kept going. It was going well, so we kind of rolled with it. We have something that we call Royal Cider, which I know there's a few different ideas about what that is. We just sort of,
what is that? What is that? Because I do see that around here a bit, right? That term, Royal Cider.
Yeah, we started making it a few years back, and I was looking for a name as what is this thing that we're making. We were trying to make something that was like port, because there's a port maker in Ithaca, and he's a fourth generation French port maker or something like this, and so he's just an inspiring guy to talk to, and I was like, I want to do that. I want to make what you're making, but with apples. So we've tried to do that. We're learning a lot, doing it a little bit better each year, hopefully. And then we were looking for a name as what is this called, and looked like there was some historical reference to that being made in Europe, like in England, although I think that product was somewhat dry, it sounds like, I'm not sure. But there was one other producer in England making something similar to what we're making now, which is basically like an ice cider fortified. So it's sort of a higher strength cider base that you're starting with that has some more sugar. We're fermenting it, so more elevated acidity and more elevated alcohol. So you're fermenting close to 12% alcohol probably with this sort of ice cider. And then fortifying with an apple brandy to bring it up to that shelf stable point where it's you're roughly 18% alcohol. It sort of naturally clarifies and doesn't need to be refrigerated after opening. It's sort of a stable product at that point. And it has that port-like quality, but again, benefits from at least a year of aging. This year, we're able to get closer to 2 years. And we do a lot of barrel aging with that, too, to try to get it to speed up that aging process, kind of get it oxidized or a sort of micro-oxidized, I guess.
So, again, are you using a freezer?
Oh, yeah.
To freeze the cider?
I guess what I was getting at was that with the four ciders, one of them is a Honeycrisp ice cider. And that one has turned out to be our probably qualitatively our best one. And then folks really, you know, from a customer perspective are really enjoying that one the most.
Why do you think that is? Culinary apples make really good iced cider.
Yeah, this is what I'm finding out. I was always like, Honeycrisp would make terrible cider. And you know, oftentimes it maybe is not making the most interesting, just sort of dry cider.
Yeah.
But for the flavor profile on that one for an iced cider is pretty amazing. It's just, you know, taking the best of the Honeycrisp flavor, like, and stripping away that, you know, texture, juiciness, whatever, and really concentrating it down. Maybe also just some lucky ferments with that one, but it's been super flavorful, super aromatic. Some down in the tasting room now. We just released it last week.
And what's the ABV on that one?
They're all right around the same. Depends on the winter, but this is what we can kind of make extractions to.
Sure.
But we usually start with 35 to 40 bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that usually leaves us with something that peters out around 12% alcohol is where we stop at.
Yeah, sounds about right.
So sometimes we use a freezer, and sometimes we use the outdoors, depending on what varieties we're using, depending on the year.
Do you have enough cold weather here to be able to do a freeze? I mean, that's really my question.
I'm
no judgment on how you're doing
Although,
you know, if you talk to the ice cider queen herself, Eleanor Leger, she would say the way to do it is outdoors, and there's, like, you know, a certain feeling about it. But, you know, climate change is a big issue.
Totally.
And so I'm wondering, and lake effect.
I don't know any qualitative difference in the way that you get it frozen. Like, you could put it in a freezer, or you can let it freeze outside, and I don't think there's anything qualitatively different. I think there's probably qualitatively different when you try to make the extraction, like when you pull it out. We've tried to mimic that, like taking it out of the freezer. Like a Honeycrisp, it's ready in September, so we don't like to store that for a long period of time. We'll often press it while it's good and then freeze the juice and make the extractions later in the winter, but we usually take all of the tanks outdoors to make extractions, whether they've been frozen by winter cold or not. But then the freezing and thawing, the sort of warm days, cold nights really helps make the separation more complete. You get better yield.
You came in here, you know, on this property over 11 years ago?
2008, so yeah, about 11, yeah.
Yeah, 11 years ago. And it feels like you have your finger in everything.
Mm-hmm. What
keeps you going, Garrett? And I know there's been also some changes here at the farm,
too. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I don't know if you're willing to talk about that
sure.
at all. But Melissa has moved on.
Yeah.
And so that, I'm sure, is a big, you know, it's hard to be in partnership with somebody and to run a business. And in the cider world, there's a lot of people up against that. And, you know, some of my French friends and cider makers, Eric Bordelais, will say, you know, it's amazing that, you know, he's still together with his wife, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And like so many cider makers, you know, have had difficulty kind of keeping it. It's really, really, really tough.
Yeah, for sure.
So what keeps you going? Like, is there like what do you do for yourself to keep your sanity, man? Because you you know quite a bit about everything right now, and that's a lot at this juncture of time.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel like the pace here is kind of kicking up from what it was,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Which is what you want. It's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
But what does Garrett do for himself to not lose his mind? Is it going out and like screaming in the back 40? Or is it, I don't know, grabbing some good iced wine and, you know.
Yeah, good question.
You know, throwing darts at the wall or, you know, going four-wheeling, or do you have a mantra? How are you keeping your sanity in all this?
Cause, right.
You know, now like the Finger Lakes Cider House is like a go-to destination. You're getting a lot of, like, you know, big kudos for where you are with this, and I'm sure it feels really good. At the same time, you know, this partnership, you know, is you know, we have, sometimes things change. We have to say goodbye to scenes that felt so good, and then all of a sudden, like, what the hell? What's going on? You know. So, what do you do? And how's that changed for you? When you first came here, I'm sure it was like kind of working the land and feeling like the, damn, we're going to put up that building, and
yes.
now the building's up, and you're like, I know we're up in this office, and I could tell, you know, there's sheetrock, but the sheetrock still needs, like, some paint, right? You know, we kind of get the finish work, but we don't get all the edges. And mm-hmm. So how are you dealing with the edges of life?
That's a lot. That's a big question. I think you kind of nailed it, though. That's a lot of what I'm thinking about a lot these days. Yeah, it's sort of right in the forefront. It's been... Feels like a long journey, you know, 10 years, 11 years. We started this business. I was 22. Yeah, I'm 34 now. So most of my adult life is just doing this.
Going. 100 miles an hour, man.
I didn't get into this whole farm and cider house and, like, the business that we were running as a business proposition. I wasn't like, this is, like, a great way to make money.
You got into it because?
Yeah, because it looked like a really enjoyable way to spend a life. You know, it looked like something I was passionate about. I was really, and I still am passionate about the farming side of things, about a place-based life, about being able to make a living from a land base and when sort of be in a rural community and live in a rural community and be like a valuable player to my local folks here.
Definitely.
I grew up nearby here. I grew up sort of a couple towns over on the other side of the lake. And moved back to the region. It's like, what a beautiful place to be. And these are my people. I want to be here.
Yeah.
So a lot of that energy is still what sustains me. Is that interest in doing good things for the land and mm-hmm. good things in my local community. And that's sort of endlessly intriguing. Is the stuff with the soil and the trees and planting more trees mm-hmm. and building more soil and figuring out how to. This was like a turning point in life, was started out with this idea that we're just going to come to sort of land and live lightly and do less harm. And then it was like, well, we kind of need to do more than that. We need to figure out how to do good things. We need to do more good instead of just less harm.
Is there something that you would have said to Garrett, younger Garrett, 11 years ago?
Yeah, don't try so hard. Prioritize your relationships with other humans. Yeah, I think, and is to take it slow. I think we jumped into a lot fast and totally leveraged at every moment financially and time wise. You know, every resource that we had is kind of each year we just leverage that and take mm-hmm. the next step, which has its benefits too. And it's it's a big chasm to leap to, like, go from we were working off the farm for a long time up until the start of the cider house. It was hard to make a full living from the mm-hmm. farm. And so it was like this kind of one foot on each side of mm-hmm. farm versus your town job. And making that leap over that chasm was like a big decision. And it involved moving faster and taking on mm-hmm. debt and making it a serious business plan.
Yeah.
I don't regret that. I think it was a good thing to do. It's kind of stepping fully into the business and life here on the farm is a great decision, I think. But it did kind of kick up the pressures up a notch, the need to keep moving a notch. There's no security of the town job.
To be successful, sometimes it takes an amazing drive. Did you get help setting up that business plan? And at that juncture, was there something that you leaned on along the way? And regionally around here in this region, in terms of, like, business people or other models that you're looking at to survive? Or was it just freaking winging it? Or do you have, like, a business background?
No, yeah.
I'm serious. I'm impressed. I mean, I'm impressed to what you have here. I've been to many places around the world, and you really have built up quite an infrastructure here. But,
thank you. Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get to this place. You got here. And
yeah.
I'm wondering how, you know, like...
Yeah, there's a lot of heavy lifting. I think Melissa and I just relied a lot on each other. It was which was positive, but it would have been great to have more mentorship, I think. We were both... just had a lot of energy and a lot of interest and willingness to just move forward and take risks. Mm-hmm. Which I think got us this whole thing started, but moving a little bit slow and having more mentorship and doing things, learning from others, you know, learning from without paying for our own education necessarily the way we're paying for it. Would have been wise, but we didn't do it that way.
At the stage you're at, there weren't really that any mentors in the cider world to lean on in that way, were there?
It's true, yeah. Neither of us had come from, like, a, say, working in the wine industry for a decade and had, like, background of how does a small winery work, which would have been a good kind of concept. But we were coming to it more from the agricultural side of just young people in our 20s who wanted to try to figure out how to make a living farming, who didn't grow up farming. Melissa had gone to school and things related to agriculture. I dropped out of high school as a younger person and just started, like, seeking mentors. So I have a lot of mentors around the but in other spheres, in kind of agriculture and construction and things like that.
Right.
There's some good folks now that we're connecting with. Other business owners who are 30, 40 year established, third generation.
Cider makers, or?
They're either or apple growers or they're wine makers.
Right. Because there's not that kind of lineage in the U.S.
Exactly,
now,
right?
There isn't. I mean, you're creating that lineage now for future
which
cider
is crazy.
Makers.
Yeah. But I think
it's true, though. He's like, yeah, I could see him kind of like gulping, go, whoa, but it's true.
But I think that,
cool.
Yeah, and I think that's, I recognize that that's our role right now, is that we're just first generation growers and makers, and that's like defines the life. Is
yeah.
that both of these businesses, the farm with growing perennials and cider making or wine making, is like just such multi-generational businesses. And so when you're the first generation, you just have a different row to hoe than the next generation. So we learn a lot from those sort of second, third generation folks who are coming into an established situation, and really the momentum you have over time is amazing.
Yeah.
So we look to those guys.
So looking forward then, we look back a little bit, and that was some good advice to your younger self. Looking forward, is there a 5-year, 10-year plan for Finger Lakes Cider House? Knowing, like, back when you started, there was no cider associations. Those are all relatively new things in the U.S. No really kind of mentors in that way. And now here you are kind of juxtaposed as, like, a key player in the U.S. for the information you have based upon what you built here. It's just outstanding. Have you had time to be able to think about that 5 years? It was nodding yes, so I'm kind of curious.
When we started, we thought we kind of knew where we were going. That was maybe the Cider House opened 5 years ago, and we're just in a very different place now than we were 5 years ago. So what I'm shortening the kind of forecasting, looking a little bit less far out because things are changing rapidly, like the industry itself is evolving rapidly. Our skills and knowledge are evolving rapidly, so looking more just like kind of a couple years out seems like more accurate for our predicting. Just because I'm just totally surprised where we are now from where we were 5 years ago.
I'm sure you are.
And 5 years in that 5 years was, you know, when we, you know, 5 years further back than that, also just way different than I would have predicted. So a little bit more day by day, year by year, but. We're really continuing to put the focus on the place, which feels really good, which is like the place-based experience of what we're doing. So really trying to take our farm into a little bit more of a adolescent sort of next decade, from the first 10-year startup, let's take the farm to the next step. Let's make this place more of a center for folks to come and experience apple growing, experience the farm, experience cider culture, experience local food culture.
And they do through the food that you serve, which is really integral to like what you're growing out here, right? All the garden and the salad and yada yada. It just goes on. It's like very full service in that way, from farm to table experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that wasn't our intention starting up 5 years ago, and it's evolved. So I can see that starting to take on a little bit of life of its own and it feels like a good thing. You know, it's tying in very much the local food culture with the the local beverage, the growing side of things. So we work with all of our farming friends who are right around here to see what kind of food can be made out of 90% local ingredients, which is a fun task. So we're getting ready right now for like, what do you do when salad greens run out in the winter? So we're kind of preparing ferments and roots and storage stuff. And that's a fun counterpoint and part of that experience, I think, that people are coming to enjoy about the place. So expanding, expanding venue, expanding farm side of things, interaction with customers to the farm. So getting people out, picking things, touching trees, touching soil. The direct customer interaction stuff is a large focus for us. So the cider club that we have now is a big, becoming more and more focus. It feels good to us. Seems like customers are really digging it. So we're starting to put lots of effort into that and just roll with that.
Can I ask you a little bit about your branding?
Sure.
Because you know, from the outside, there's a lot of names.
Super confusing.
A lot of names. So
this is a long story.
I want to say, I'm not going to say it's confusing. You're saying it's
super
confusing.
Confusing.
I just want to say, you know, from the outside, from the vantage, there's a lot of names, and they're all really nice names.
They are.
They're all really nice names. If you wanted people to leave with one name from your business, what would it be, the lead name that you'd want?
Finger Lakes Cider House, for sure. Yeah.
Finger Lakes Cider House.
Yeah.
And then you have a house cider here.
Yes, we do.
That's called Kite and String.
Yes. Yes.
And that's your house cider. You don't have any guest ciders.
Correct. This year, no guest ciders at the cider house. That may be something we could get back into next year. We're talking about it. We were just simplifying things. Yeah. I mean, maybe we want to talk about branding.
I want to talk a little bit more about branding.
Yeah, let's
do that.
Finger Lakes Cider House, Kite and String.
Kite and String. And so looking at that, because you discovered that there was another, like, Good Life brand out there.
Yeah,
right?
So we still have a farm called Good Life Farm.
Right.
So we run two separate entities right now. It's all the same people, but two separate entities. Mm-hmm. And then Kite and String is our sort of a sub-brand of Finger Lakes Cider House.
But as a little advice for the folks who are like, you know, cider people, and they're like, oh my God, I just want to be like Garrett. Oh, what he's doing, Finger Lakes Cider House,
you're
so
out
amazing.
Of your mind, yeah.
No, you're not on mine. You know, you definitely do not seem like somebody out of your mind. I just want to say that.
Thanks.
Anybody who wants to emulate you would not be out of their mind. But with that said, what would be the advice around, like, looking at names and stuff? Because that's a big thing for any business, whether it's cidery or, you know, the agricultural piece. What would you be your advice looking back on that? What was your lesson to kind of learn?
Yeah, there's that lesson, and there's, like, one lesson before that, which is, like, the concept, they call it, maybe familiar, the e-myth concept, right? Which is, like, the entrepreneur myth. Like, if you want to be a baker, don't necessarily go start a business that is a bakery. If you want to be a farmer, don't go necessarily start a business as a farm or a cidery. Similarly, like, if you want to make cider, maybe just make cider with another business that makes cider. But if you're excited to be learning things about trademark law, about human resources, about hiring and firing people, about taxes, about, you know, licensing, about entrepreneurial stuff and marketing, etc., which is what you'll do if you start a business, then you should do that. Turns out, very fortunately, I'm interested in that kind of stuff. I didn't think I was, but I am. I'm, like, interested in all the business side of running a cidery, as well as the sort of the farm and the cider side of things. But I think if you just want to bake bread, you should just work at a bakery and bake bread. I started off making a lot more cider and doing a lot more ag stuff. Like, most of my time is spent doing that, and now it's not. It's just, it can't be. Someone's got to do all this.
Yeah.
Like, there's a huge amount of stuff to do. So learn trademark law. I'm a lot more versed in trademark law now.
Who would have thought, right, that you have to worry about this?
But yeah, after you get your first cease and desist letter, it's like, okay, there's a whole thing I got
to
learn here.
Whole thing to go on there,
So the last 4 years I've been studying trademark law a bit, talked with a lawyer a couple days ago about it, because we're still a little bit embroiled in how do we solidify brands here and who's got what protected, and it's super complicated. There's a lot of so just to answer that specifically, there's a lot of ways that people can search online and keep the fees reasonable for kind of creating their own trademark. Trademarks can range, I don't really know the upper end of it, but minimum a couple $1,000, maybe you're going up to 10, maybe you're going more. But you can do a lot of the legwork yourself mm-hmm. to kind of save yourself some hassle. Right. But we had no idea starting Good Life Cider that there was a Good Life Brewing with a preceding trademark out west, and we were in the same category considered by the government. So rebranded.
That sucks.
Yeah. Whoops.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks.
But it gave us an opportunity.
Happened.
Yeah.
You're not the first, you know,
for sure.
Craft beverage maker that has gone through that. I've seen it many, many times.
And with the that's one downside of the explosion of craft producers is that almost every name you can think of has some other name that's quite similar to it in mm-hmm. some way that you're probably infringing on someone's trademark if they've got one, which some people forget to get it.
Right.
That you pretty much just have to make something up, like mm-hmm. Xerox, right? That's the classic example. They make up a word
right,
or make up
right.
a weird phrase or a couple words.
It
becomes
part of it, yeah.
Yeah, because there's thousands. There's many,
yeah.
many thousands.
Yeah.
And so to be stand out and unique and...
is a big one, no doubt.
Yeah, if you don't
yeah.
want to get the cease and desist letter that
yeah.
makes you start over.
Well, we're glad that you're not starting over and that you are exactly where you are.
Yes, yeah, yeah. We'd like to see if we can consolidate more under the Finger Lakes Cider House brand. Down the road, but unfortunately the word Finger Lakes can't be put on a bottle of cider, so that's been a challenge.
Darn.
It's not apple wine, and it's an American viticultural area, the Finger Lakes, so the government doesn't allow cider to carry that name, which is a silly rule right now, but we'll see.
Mm.
And the term FLX, which would be another great
that's
word,
I was wondering, yeah.
is embroiled in a who owns this trademark kind of thing right now.
Uh-huh.
There's an individual trying to own the term FLX. There's a whole bunch of people who are like, hey, that's a region. You can't own a region. And so we're kind of working through that. It'd be great to be able to use that term more freely.
Mm-hmm. But it is okay for Finger Lakes Cider House. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yep. It's a really... when names are that generic...
Generic. It can't be. It's like Cider Chat. It's
yes.
so generic.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's kind of protected in a way, which is
yeah.
good and bad. But
good and
it's
bad.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, and we're just hoping to be able to use it freely rather than like exclude other folks from using it.
Right, right.
But which is
interesting.
Yeah, so we're going down that road, but mostly we're sort of leading with the Finger Lakes Cider House brand because that's really what we do is the sort of the place based thing and the local
yeah.
Connection to the region. So we do a lot of sales in the region, but not a lot outside of the region. It's not we're not. We're not going down the path of large distribution out and about in the world. The cider's trickling out to a few places like in Maine and New Hampshire, and which is awesome, to some new cider bars that are starting
fantastic.
There.
Fantastic. Up in Perennial, up
yeah.
in Maine.
Yeah, cool
the
places
cider
up
bar
there.
In the Belfast.
And then it trickles down to Pennsylvania a little bit, and then otherwise to get anywhere else, we're shipping it to our club. We have some club members around the country, so...
And people really should just come right to the
that's,
Finger Lakes.
That's really what
house.
We want to do, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's hard to get the full, like... It's great for people to be tasting good cider out in their wine, you know, in shops or cider groceries or wine shops, but we're trying to get across more of that, you know, more than that to customers, and coming here is the way to do it, and
definitely.
It's a fun interaction.
One of my favorite quotes from Garrett in this conversation was when he talked about why he got into like starting the Good Life Farm and the Finger Lakes Cider House. And it was pretty simple. It was just, it looked like a really enjoyable way to spend a life. And that's pretty darn sincere and kind of speaks volumes about who he is. And I feel that also goes into the quality of the experience at the Finger Lakes Cider House. I really want to recommend that you make this one of your destinations. And when you go and visit that site, take the time. Don't expect it to be like a drop in and drop out kind of experience. Sit down, have a bite to eat, have the tasting of the flight, walk about a bit, and just imagine what it was like 11 years ago to now and the changes. What you can do when you kind of put your head to the ground and you just start moving forward with a lot of tenacity and amazing endurance, no doubt. We did have an opportunity to tour the cidery, which is below the main tasting room. So in the barn, there's like three different levels, and the lowest level is the cidery. The main level is the tasting room and the cider store, and then the upper level is offices and whatnot. But at that lower level is the cidery, and that is really managed now by his brother, Jimmy. And you want to look at the photo of that cidery that I took with Jimmy in the forefront, because it is so well organized. You just get this feeling that, yeah, everything's okay and it's being taken care of. And I was really impressed by that. I mean, that speaks volumes of how clean it was and also how organized. I've really actually never seen anything like it. It was pretty outstanding. So you want to check that out too. And they have a whole bevy of different ciders to choose from. It's that alone is really impressive. And one thing you should know is that these are award-winning ciders. And in New York State, there's something called the Governor's Cider Cup. And their Pioneer Pippin from 2017 has won it for the past 2 years in a row. So I hope that you're lucky enough to get that. Again, that is made using the traditional method, which is much, basically, you can't say it's champagne, but they're using that same method that you would make for champagne, which is bottle conditioning, and you have these beautiful little bubbles inside. And they're using this equipment that they garnered from the local wine industry, which is this big round cylinder. And in the center, it has all these holes that spins around, and they're able to freeze the neck of each bottle and do the disgorging and then recorking it. So a lot of their bottles are in the 750 mil format and are cork and cage. And there's a whole range of ciders to choose from. And there's not one that I have not enjoyed. I also tried the Royal Ice Cider. And remember, that's where they were blending the brandy in with the ice cider. And that was quite an experience, because you could really taste this kind of like, it's like kind of cider that you just pour a wee bit in the glass and savor. And on this day where there's so much snow outside, it's just a perfect compliment. And I also want to say that they have what is called, classically in France, a Pommeau. And that product, it is outstanding. It was absolutely delicious. In fact, I tried a couple Pommeaus in that region there, and not one disappointed. The Finger Lakes Cider House Pommeau, it really stood out. It's just scrum delicious. What can I say? So kudos to Jimmy and to Garrett and to the whole team there. Let's take a little pause here, and I'll be right back. Commercial makers interested in getting a frank opinion from retail buyers, the people who put ciders on the shelf, in bars, and in restaurants, will want to enter the upcoming 3rd annual New York International Cider Competition, taking place on February 9th, 2020 in New York City. Ciders are judged based upon category and price point. Submission forms for the February 9th, 2020 competition held in New York can be found online at nyicidercompetition.com. If the dark days of winter are kind of getting you down, well, you could always go to the Southern Hemisphere, or have a little patience, because soon winter solstice will be here on December 21st and the days will start getting longer once again. Which just goes to show you that there is always a silver lining out and about in Ciderville. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you soon in Ciderville.
We like cider. There is a reason why we do it like this. Yes, there is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is a reason why we do it like this. Yes, there is a reason why we do it like this. We like water. walking through the orchards, dancing in the street, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun. Some fun.